You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
There were these prints out in Ball Club.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like breaking day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is
size
like
and everything else, they just were too realistic.
And they're
to be
frozen like a tree.
The hand was freaking out.
Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives. Bigfoot lives. It's a movie.
Right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Walls, what you think I've seen? Some strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and we're talking moxie joke. Well, party gonna have having the St. John's Walls. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Star.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Discardi. If you'd like to join us in our live discussions during the program, just dial in and join us at 347-996-5877. That's 347-996-5877. Just dial in and wait for the moderator to announce your area code and bring you on to the show. And now everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hey, good buddy. I'm doing well. How is everybody out there?
Doing great, Tom. Doing great.
Listen, I want to say hello real quick. As you guys know, I've been working bell to bell on our projects and traveling all over the country, and we just opened up a new show in Las Vegas, and boy, I'll tell you, things are hopping right now. Things are just incredible. And you know what? I want to say hello to all of our extended families from the north up in Montana to the south down to New Mexico to the east to New York, and of course to the west all the way in California and everywhere in between. Marco, I want to tell you it's been a delight, and please forgive me. Last couple of shows, I've been on hiatus, just taking care of business. But I'm here for at least the first couple of guests here this evening, and it's good to be back in the saddle once again.
Well, it's good to have you back in the saddle. Are your boots sore?
You know, I've been listening to the archive shows, and you guys have to forgive me one more time. It's been a while, and I got to tell you, it has been exciting. I've fastened my own seatbelt. Okay, because it's been a roller coaster ride for myself. And I got to tell you, it's been one exciting adventure.
That's great, Tom. Well, welcome
back.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact, tonight, I'm having my divine pleasure. I'm having dinner with a Contessa from my
wow.
own hometown, from my own country, from Italy. And it's going to be an honor that I'm going to be able to speak to her and her fine husband and just enjoy a wonderful evening of reminiscing. And Frank Sinatra, there you go.
There you go,
so
Frank
it's going to be a beautiful evening. But you know what? I got to tell you something. My heart goes out to our people out there in the Bigfoot world. We're out there to 32 countries around the world. 4.5 million people are hearing our voices tonight. So without any further ado, let's go out to our first guest who's out there in Canada. I guess it's Joshua, huh?
Well, Joshua didn't dial in yet. I'm going to have to try to help him out, I think. Let's go with, should we go with Bruce first?
All right, let's get up there to Montana, to our extended family up there on the Blackfeet Reservation. Bruce Schilt. Bruce, you out there?
Bruce?
Hello, I'm here.
How are you, my brother? Nice to hear your voice.
Oh, I'm terrific, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. How is the weather up there in Montana?
Well, it's warming up now. We had a couple of little snow spells there, about 4 inches.
Snow spells?
Yeah.
So what's the temperature?
It's in the 50s.
Oh, you're kidding. It's time to wear the bathing suit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weather. Yeah.
Well, how cold is it getting that night, Bruce?
Oh, down in the 30s.
The 30s, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it's not too cold then for you guys. Listen, tell me about the action that's been going up up there. I understand you guys went up on the mountain and you saw one of the creatures.
Yeah, well, we thought it was a creature. We went up there and we saw this little black thing on the snowbank up there, and we didn't have our glasses with us because we just checking out the weather to see if we could make it up there, and we did. And we didn't have anything with us. We didn't plan it. And then the next day we went back and we didn't see it. And so the third day we went back, we saw it again, and here it was a bear. It was a bear digging in the snow up there. And
they were going underneath for food into the ground.
Yeah, it was right on top of the mountain, about a little ways down, quarter of the ways down. I never saw a bear up that high before. But that was big excitement. Then we saw some scat on the trail up there. It had horsehair in it, and it must have been maybe 8 or 10 inches. You know, it was a big one. We sent a picture to Java Bob, and I don't know if he got to look at it or anything, but I don't know what it was.
Wow. So let me ask you this. Here's the big question. Did anybody take a picture?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Well, you did?
Hmm? Yeah, I did. I went prepared the next time. I had my video camera and my big binoculars and my little digital. And I don't know if we got a video of it because it was so far away, but we got a couple digitals of it, and you can barely see it, but we couldn't get all the way to the mountain because there's still snow under the mountain, but we got up to the edge of the mountain.
And are the roads passable at all, Bruce? Can you get through there with the 4x4s?
Yeah, you can. I haven't checked it out lately this week, but it's probably wet right now because it's been thawing. And the snow's
now, let me give you some news. A.K. Riley from the Apache Reservation, White Mountains in Arizona, called me 2 days ago, and I guess they're going to have him on tonight. They just had some action out there. And it looks like the creatures are starting to migrate now from north to south. So,
really?
You know, yeah. As a matter of fact, A&E is supposed to film me this weekend. They're coming here to Vegas. Bob Saget. You know Bob Saget on TV?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So they're going to film me for 4 hours, I think, Saturday. So I'll let you know when the episode hits. And then, you know, I was up there in London last week, and they filmed me there.
Holy smokes. Yeah, I know you sure been busy. I did get a hold of you to say hi one time or twice.
Yeah, I know, which is rare today because I don't have even time to reminisce with any of my friends. But I'll tell you what, these creatures are on the move. They're migrating right now as we speak. The Apaches now up in White Mountain have action going on, and I can't wait to pick up the archive show due to the fact that I know it's going to be a great one. Marco Bill and Java Bob and Alex are all going to be quizzing AK up there on the reservation. And, oh, by the way, I understand that they're voting in new elections for new chairpersons. Are they doing that on your reservation now also?
Not right now, but they will be. Every 4 years, I think. I don't know when the election is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's wonderful, man. I'm glad to see it. How's the family? Everybody okay?
Oh, yeah, we're terrific. Yeah, we're all doing okay.
Well, great.
How are you?
I'm doing well. As a matter of fact, I'm going to see if the contestant and her husband's going to come up to Montana with us, and we'll give them some of that reservation hospitality. What do you think?
I'm waiting. Still waiting.
Okay, buddy. All right. Well, listen, you be well. Say hello to everybody, and we'll catch on to the next guest, okay?
You bet, Tom. God bless you, and we love you.
God bless you, too, my brother. Be well. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Bruce Schilt up there on the Blackfeet Reservation up in Browning, Montana. As you can see, it's bathing suit weather. It's 50 degrees. My gosh, 30 degrees at night. Marco Bill, who's next on the line?
Well, we got Joshua on the line.
Oh, good. Let's talk to Joshua. Let's get up there. What part of Canada?
Hello.
You're on, Joshua.
Hey, guys. How you
Joshua,
doing?
Hey, Joshua. Tom Biscardi. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good, Tom. Nice talking to you again.
Yeah, listen, I'm sorry that I didn't interview you personally on the radio when you came on, but I got you now. What part of Canada you at, Joshua?
I'm on Vancouver Island in B.C.
Oh, Vancouver Island in B.C. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Listen, you know, you and I had a nice little talk about the Madison Gimlin film, and you know what my sentiments are.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
Yeah. Well, what's your sentiments on it?
Well, my sentiments pretty much are, regardless of whether you think Bigfoot is real or not, pretty much on all the investigation that I've done into the Patterson film over the years, and especially lately, I would say that the idea that the Patterson film shows an actual Bigfoot, I would say, is about 99.999% negative. Yeah.
You know what? Thank you. I appreciate that because we know the truth as you know the truth now, okay?
Mm.
We went to the horse's mouth. We interviewed the people. We've got them on camera. It'll be on our new movie. And you and I both know the truth now, don't we?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting what we talked about the other week.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But you know what? I hope to God, you know, that the people in the Bigfoot world hold this creature, the Patterson Gimlin film, as the Holy Grail at this point in time. It's been
yeah,
in excess of 40 years, as you know, all right?
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, you know, that's the thing that got me into this whole damn industry. And if it
wasn't
six personal encounters, sightings, or what have you, myself in the last 37,
mm-hmm.
I would not, okay, have ever believed it. But I do know that there is an undiscovered, unknown primate roaming the swamps and hills and mountainside of this country. And I want to thank you for your initiative, the initiative that you have taken to go out and research this thing, to bring forth to the world and telling the truth. That's all I have to say on this matter because, you know, there's too many more important things going on the research that we are personally doing and the DNA that we've uncovered and have given to the DNA Diagnostic Center there in Texas, and Dr. Melba Ketchum, she's been in our corner like you won't believe, and we've been honored to have her doing what she's doing. And I'll tell you what, I encourage everybody out there, any evidence that you have uncovered, contact my office, myself. We'll be more than happy to get it over to Dr. Ketchum's because this will do nothing but enhance what we got going and making and bringing it forth and let the world know that there is something unknown inhabiting these mountains and swamps.
Yeah, I was talking to Java Bob about the DNA last week. He was telling me some pretty interesting stuff, mentioning bone or skin or hair or something.
Oh, it looks like we may have lost Tom. We did. We lost Tom. Anyway, well, I'll pick up where Tom left off. Yeah, what Jive Old Bob was talking about. In fact, he's on here with us right now, and I can unmute him. Jive Old Bob, you're on. Basically, talking about there was bone, there was a toenail, and there's some other stuff.
Yeah,
Jive Old Bob, you're on there.
Many different things, and we had this person in particular has several samples from several different researchers, and she's working hard to compare them and see how they match up. And what's happening is it's a very long and laborious process. So of course we're not able to say anything about any of them yet. But what happens is they typically check a genome, which is a group of pairs in the DNA strand that are common to that particular species. Or, you know, for an organ or something that they would all have. And unfortunately, there's like 8 million different pairs, and these sections that they normally compare have about 360 or maybe 400 pairs. And so they have to do a much more involved check than that, and it takes a very long time. It's almost like mapping the whole DNA process. So they're not able to say anything at this point, but so far they're very encouraged that we have something that is very human-like, but not the same as human.
Yeah, Bob, last week when we were talking, you were mentioning that what you knew so far was that it looked to be that the DNA samples were something like a few base pairs off of human, basically.
Yeah,
and you were mentioning that it looked to be closer to human than Homo neanderthalensis, like Neanderthals.
So far, that's the initial input. But like I say, we're a long ways from having the whole thing done. You know, there is a slight variance in human anyway, but this is far enough away that it's not quite human, and it's just a little bit further away than Neanderthal, which is quite a ways away from chimpanzee, which is our next closest. So, pretty amazing stuff. And then, you know, but it's not progressed far enough for us to say anything definitive at this point. That would be very premature. But it certainly has our attention, and it's holding our interest, and we're supporting that work as we speak.
Well, I wish you guys luck with that.
Yeah, it's... you know, it's going to be, and you know, it's going to open the door. If the results stay the way they look like they're going to, it's going to open the door to some very serious research, from some very serious scientific people. Scientific population now is very hesitant to get too far out on a limb with this thing because. You know, it could shine very negatively on their professional resume. So they're very very cautious and move very slowly, and I'm okay with that. You know, I want to know the truth and I want it out where people can see it. So it's just going to take a long time, and we're going to have to be very patient. But
right.
We are doing it.
Bob, if I can ask you a question, I think a lot of people would be interested to know about. You mentioned some of the DNA coming from bone, and for me particularly, I find that very interesting because basically one of the main reasons, the number one reason why I personally have a hard time giving credence to the idea that Bigfoot exists is basically because no remains have been found. And I think, to date anyway, we have, you know, no type specimen, and I think... That is the hardest argument. So the thing I want to know about is the bones. Like, if you guys got bones from possibly Bigfoot, I'm really interested to hear about how those were acquired. Do you think you'd be able to tell us a bit about that?
Oh, you can see them on our website, actually. One of the things about the bones is if you find a bone, all right,
mm-hmm.
And they don't have anything to compare it to, how can they say it's a bone from a Bigfoot?
Well, I think
so. What they say,
looking
no,
at
I think if you had, like, not a fossil, but an actual bone of a Bigfoot, I would say, first of all, the first thing you'd probably want to do to it is DNA testing.
Uh-huh. And if the DNA came back and they checked just the certain pair, you know, a few pairs, and it came back human, then would you have remains from a Bigfoot? Would they say that?
No, I think they'd say you had remains of a human.
Yeah, exactly. So what you have to do is you have to check much further, and which is not normally done. And when you check further, that's when you start to run into some of these anomalies. And that's the we're into now. And the reason we're able to do that and get that far is we found a professional who thinks that the probability of one of these creatures existing is high enough that it's worth their time and effort to check that thoroughly.
Right. Do you mind if I ask what type of bone it was that was found?
Well, the piece that we're talking about is coming from a tooth.
Ah, a tooth, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is the tooth, is it like a whole tooth or a part of a tooth?
It's the whole tooth and nothing but the tooth.
I set you up.
Bob, why don't you tell them basically just kind of like how we found this?
Yeah, that would be great.
About give them the kind of the, how we went about doing this.
Well, we had come in contact with some people in Texas that said they were doing a kind of an archaeological dig in their own yard looking for artifacts, and they came upon a skeleton that was 109 inches long. And clearly not Native American. And they got in touch with the university who came out and exhumed the skeleton. We were there when it was first uncovered. We have photos of it. And, you know, I have a tooth from that sample.
109 inches. That's huge.
Yes, it is. And it's clearly not, I mean, that's tall for almost any race, but clearly for Asian. Supposedly, people from Asia that came across the Bering Strait. That's
how old, Java Bob? Tell them how old it was.
Estimated at if I recall, it was like 2,000 years old,
2,500 years old.
So sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting, and the entire story is on our website. If you go to the table of contents and go down to Texas, you'll see. I have them listed. Everything that, you know, all of our expeditions in Texas, and one of them in white in parentheses, it gives a slight description and it talks about the skeleton. And if you'll click on that link, it'll take you to that story. You'll see pictures of the skeleton. You'll see everything we got there, and you'll see the story, and you'll see posted the DNA that they found, and what they show is a genome. And this genome is very similar to human, but not quite human. Now, after we started getting more involved with them and asking for more information, they said, well, since they couldn't explain this, that's my guess. That's not what they said. This is my guess. They weren't able to explain what they had. They told the people that were discussing it with us from the university, told the people that were discussing it with us, that they were not to discuss it with us any further, and as a matter of fact, this site does not exist.
Hmm. That's interesting.
But yet, we have pictures of it. We have the DNA results posted. We have all that stuff posted, but they say it doesn't exist. And I have, like I said, I have a tooth.
Now, Java Bob, can I ask you a question about the skeleton? I would sort of expect that from the way that most people commonly describe Bigfoot or Sasquatch, you would expect that the skeleton would be quite morphologically different from that of a Homo sapien, that of a human. And I'm just wondering, like, can you tell us a bit about, like, what the skull looked like? I would expect that to look quite different from a human.
Well, it didn't look a whole lot different. You know, I'm not an expert on these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously it was very, very large, very heavy boned. And the teeth, although not the tooth that I have, but the teeth that were there had, some of them had double roots, which is not common in humans for those particular teeth. So there were some anomalies there that were not, that didn't quite fit. But just from looking at
about the top of the skull, like nothing like a sagittal crest up on the top or anything like that?
Signs of a sagittal crest. And we did look for that. And the skull was fractured in certain places. It had been there a long time, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so much detail. So I couldn't get into that that much detail. And we did not want to disturb it very much because we knew it was under investigation at that time by the university. So
right.
The last thing we wanted to do, and we didn't know, although the size was significant, but prior to the DNA results, we didn't know if this had been Native American or whatnot, and we didn't want to desecrate the grave, if that's what it was. So we were
right.
Very careful in how we handled it, and we didn't want to disturb it. So we took photos, and this particular tooth was dislodged, and I picked it up and just so I had something. Right, and so that's...
Now, Java Bob, can you tell us about what kind of tooth it is? Like, is it a molar or a canine or an incisor?
It's... Let me turn the light on in here. I have it here in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I have it and up mounted here. It's... Let me see. I don't know what to call these teeth this year.
Like, is it like one of the flat teeth, like in the back of your jaw that you use for chewing, or?
Okay. Yeah. You done?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah. If you go to the molars,
uh-huh.
It's the first tooth in front of the molars, towards the front of the mouth.
Oh, it's a premolar. That's called a premolar.
That's what it is.
Right. What's the size of it, would you say?
Well, I'd say it's about an inch long and about probably a quarter inch in diameter. And across the top, it's worn down quite a bit, and it's between a quarter and a half an inch in diameter.
So you wouldn't say it's like huge?
No.
That's very interesting because a lot of proponents of Bigfoot are proponents of the idea that Bigfoot is a descendant of an ancient ape called Gigantopithecus, which is, we only know it from a couple of jaws and a whole lot of teeth that we found. But the teeth that we found of Gigantopithecus in China and Vietnam, they're just huge. They're just big, massive teeth, right? So people,
right.
You know... You would think if you found Bigfoot and it was related to Gigantopithecus, you'd have some great big teeth. But what you got there is not very big.
No, it's not huge. The jaw is thicker than I would. But like I say, I'm not an expert on these things. So you know, I'm not. If you showed me a human skull from two different types of people, I wouldn't know which is which. You know, if it.
You
know,
did you notice any sort of brow ridge on the skull? You know, like you might expect to see on, like, you know, I don't know, like a Homo erectus or a Homo neanderthalensis kind of specimen?
Tell you what, no, I didn't. But I'll tell you what, if you go to the website and look at the picture, we have a picture of the whole thing laid out there, and you'll see the condition of the skull. It's not in the best of shape. It's not in one whole piece.
Right.
The leg... are in one piece, the thighs are in one piece, part of the feet have come loose, but they're still there.
So, Bob, people can see this by going to the Searching for Bigfoot website?
Yes, of course. Everything
okay.
We do, we share with the public, everything.
Right.
So that site is enormous. People don't realize just how big it is. So if you go to the table of contents,
mm-hmm.
You'll see it goes on for forever, and it has... some stories that go back to when we first started searching for Bigfoot.
Right.
And they're all different, and they're all to be viewed by anybody who wants to see them.
Right. I'm just checking out the website right now. I'm at the table of contents. Where would it be in the table of contents?
Under Texas.
Under Texas, okay.
And then you look and you'll see one. I can't remember offhand what the title was, but... alongside of the titles of each story, there's in white, in parentheses, there's a little description, and one of them says, it might say the most amazing find anything, see the skeleton or something like that.
Right. Okay, I'll see if I can find that.
You find
hey,
that?
Bob?
Yes.
Hey, Bob, it's Alex. Hey, you also have it in the scrolling menu on the first page.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, it's on the first page.
Well, no, you're in the right place. That's where you want to find anything. You can go to the table of contents. But Alex is pointing out that I have a picture of it in a scrolling thing on the front page. If you go down, if you click on that picture when it scrolls by, if you're patient and wait for it to scroll by, it'll take you to that page.
Mm-hmm.
And Joshua, I have a video. It's on www.bigfootlive.com, the radio station Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a link there, and it goes to YouTube, and it actually has the little photograph of the gravesite when they actually went in there. I think Mike Sell was there, right, for Java Bomb?
Yes, Mike Sell was there, and T.J. Piscardi was there. I was there. One of our investors was there. Tom was there.
Well, that sounds really exciting. I mean, you know, if you guys... here we go. Possibly the most important find in Bigfoot history, skeleton. I'm just loading it up now. Yeah, if you guys have what you think you have, then, you know, you have pretty much, just like it says here,
Jason,
the most important find in recent history.
You need to read my book, Monsters, Myths, and Me. The problem we have is not in finding evidence. The problem we have is in bringing that evidence to a place where it can be looked at correctly. You know, most people will not get involved. They don't want to be involved with this. It's there's so much misinformation around the world about this creature that people just take it as a joke. And anybody who makes their living as a professional, as a scientist, doesn't want to be associated with something that is so joke-like. And that's the problem. The problem is not the availability of the information. Anybody who wants to go out and look for evidence of this creature, if they find someone who can show them how to look for it and where to look, will find it. It's there. If you seek it, you'll find it.
I think it about correctly. Right. I think for a lot of people, you know, the really hard thing, I think one of the reasons why a lot of people think it's so hard to believe in Bigfoot, or why they think it's so ridiculous, is that, you know, a lot of Bigfoot proponents tell us that, you know, there's Bigfoot is literally everywhere. It's supposed to be in, you know, pretty much every state in America, every province in Canada, all over the place. And I think that's one of the really hard things, is because if you have a great big land mammal that lives all over North America, you know, you would expect that it wouldn't be just, you know, some ambiguous bones that you're finding in the ground. You'd think you'd be able to, you know, find remains of Bigfoot all over the place for, you know, hundreds of years.
Yeah. However, how many of those things turn out to be, you know, in the book and on our site as well? You'll find that many of our expeditions, you'll find that we find nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to verify any sightings or anything. We don't discredit anyone, because
mm-hmm.
we want them to feel comfortable sharing their sightings with us. And sometimes we find nothing to support it. But that doesn't mean they didn't have an experience. That just
mm-hmm.
means we think to support it. Once in a while we do. Once in a while we do. We find physical evidence to support the reported sighting or whatever, which is why we take the time to go out and investigate as many of these things as we can, because some of them pan out and some of them don't. But the problem is, many people have Bigfoot on the mind, and they see anything that they can't explain, and they call it a Bigfoot.
I think that's a big part of it.
And also, another part of it is that there are people who claim to be experts who've never been in the field. They just blog back and forth, and they've been around so long, people know their names, and it becomes part of their social life. And they you know, they write these stories, they do all this stuff, and people put that in the mix with all the other stuff that's going on, and it's so easy to find flaws and problems with it that people batch the whole group of people out there doing this kind of research into one group, and we're not. There's many people out there who are very serious and take this very serious, and there are other people out there who every time they hear a twig break, say it's a Bigfoot. Every time they see a broken twig in the forest, they say it's a Bigfoot. But not everything that goes bump in the night is a Bigfoot. And the term Bigfoot itself is got such a negative connotation about it. I mean, however, the native peoples all over this country have talked about this in their oral history forever. One of do you know who Colonel Rogers was from the War of Independence?
I'm not quite sure, no.
Colonel Rogers was probably our first special forces. He fought using the Indian techniques of warfare, you know, rather than the, you know, march up and, you know, kneel down and shoot at each other. And in his journals, he wrote that he ordered his men to fire a volley of shot over the heads of some bears that were throwing rocks at them. Now, I know that I've had rocks thrown at me from things like that I didn't see, but I knew it wasn't a bear. Mm-hmm. And I know that primates all over the world do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you look, you'll find things that just don't fit into the expectations of it being the more common animals that we see here.
Well, that's something that's really interesting to me, because you mentioned Bigfoot being in native folklore, and for me, that was something that I have for years been very, very interested in. The idea, you know, that you would expect that if Bigfoot is a real animal, then very much it should be a part of native myths, native traditions. You would expect that, not just being a part of native myths and traditions, you would expect that there would actually be, I don't know, artifacts of the creature. But one thing I've done over the years is I've looked at a lot of native myths, and I've looked at a lot of native legends that a lot of Bigfoot proponents have said, oh, this is Bigfoot, this story is Bigfoot, that figure is Bigfoot. And for me, I haven't yet found a single native legend or myth that I thought, well, you know what, that really looks like Bigfoot. Jav Bob, is there any myth in particular that you would think that is definitely Bigfoot?
Well, yeah, there's a bunch. But here's something you've got to understand. We're talking about a different culture,
mm-hmm.
all right? And our culture is very, very culture-bound. Like, for instance, you've heard of the Hantavirus?
Yes.
That killed us, the people in Arizona?
Yes.
Well, one of the things that happened when the CCD, is that what it's called? The whatever from our government, went down there and they talked to the natives.
Control, yeah, CDC.
Yeah, CDC. Okay, they went down and they talked to the natives, and then and they said, what do you think this is? And they said, well, all we know is it only happens after the rains.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, well, okay, whatever, you know, and they just, that doesn't mean anything to them because these are scientists, you know, and they only think in scientific terms and their culture, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a couple of years, they finally realize that what happens is after the rains, there's a bumper crop of pinion nuts. And when there's a bumper crop of pinion nuts, there's a bumper crop of rodents.
That's right, yeah.
So when they first heard that information, they didn't tie it together.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the native peoples talk about things as they relate to nature,
mm-hmm.
not to a science book.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it very difficult to understand some of these things. I'm fortunate enough that my minor in college was Native American spirituality, culture, and history.
Mm-hmm.
And I, although I'm not an expert on any of those things, I at least have learned a little better how to listen.
Right.
And so when you get down to some of these things that you hear now as Native American stories, some of them are relatively new, and some of them, like when we went out on the, we were called out to the White River Apache Nation to because they were having these creatures come in and look in the windows. They were getting 911 calls. They were getting, you know, they have the cast, the prints, the whole thing, and that's one of the examples of that is, and a pretty good one is in our movie, Bigfoot Lives, our DVD. Now, one of the things that happened there is the people of the old ways, and that's what they refer to them as the elders, the people who still live the traditional life, believe that seeing this creature is an arbiter of the end times, and the more you see it, the closer to the end times you're getting, and you shouldn't talk about it, and you don't want to get, you know, don't want to talk to it, you don't want to share anything you know about it. It's just not a good thing. The younger people now think, well, of course we should, you know, it's out here, it's there, we should talk about it, and we don't know what it is, it's scary, it's, you know, it's making us nervous. So depending on who you speak to, you're going to get a different story. Now, the Blackfeet, like Bruce that was just on, he said something to me once that I thought was fascinating. We were out there, and Tom asked him, do you think this is a spirit or this is an actual creature? And he said, spirit doesn't leave footprints. This is an actual creature. And it is the protector of our people. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the idea is that, you know, the Apache say it's an arbiter of the end times, and the Blackfeet say it's a protector of the people.
Yeah.
Now, they give me, when they tell me stories about it, I'm not sure if they're in parable form or if they're in factual form.
Well, I don't know. I think when it comes down to Bigfoot, I mean, if you've got a real animal, I think it doesn't matter sort of what the stories are about it. I mean, if you have a great big giant, you know, bipedal land mammal that's running around all over North America, I would expect that, you know, it's going to turn up at some point.
Well, you can expect that, but unless you get out and look for it and make it happen, it won't.
True.
It's pointing us for, you know, since we've been here. Now, the native people, now here's something I would like you to think about, okay?
Okay.
The native people, it was all part of their oral history, and it was very common. It was not unusual to see one or to have an experience with one. However, once the Caucasians got here, that became very rare. Now, at least I would assume so, according to the, you know, the way that our written history and stuff goes now. And I started thinking about that. What happened is I live in far northern California with the Karuk Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking some of the kids that came into my store at a little coffee shop. That's why they call me Java Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked these young guys, I said, do you have a name for this creature? And they said, yeah, it's Putawan. And Putawan in Karuk means spirit of the forest. And I thought, well, okay, that's vague. It really doesn't mean much. And as luck would have it, not much time after that, some of the elders came in, and I asked one of the elders, do you have a name for this creature? And he told me something completely different. And I said, so do you think this is a real creature? Do you think it exists? And he bent over, and he looked me right in the eye, and he said, what is wrong with you white people?
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it kind of was like a revelation, you know. And then I thought, it started thinking about that. Well, what's the difference between his culture and mine when we're out in the woods? And the first thing that popped into my mind was, even in the very beginning, when the Caucasian people started coming over here, they carried metal. They had metal everything with them. Now, if you've ever put a metal spoon in your mouth, you can taste it. Just put a spoon on you can taste it. If you can taste it, they can smell it. They know most of the sightings that occur happen when people are out just having a good time in the woods. They're not carrying weapons. They're not appear to be hunting. They're just, because hunters never see them or hardly ever see them. But they're just out having a good time, and these things kind of come and watch us. And if they're lucky, they'll be taking pictures of their kids or something, and in the background is when you'll see this creature. Because we're entertaining to them, but they don't want to be around us. They don't trust us. And so they go out of their way to stay hidden. And this is their world. They know this world, and they have senses far greater than ours, or far more attuned to what goes on in the woods.
So, Bob, you're thinking that maybe when Europeans first started coming into North America, you're thinking that because they had a lot of metal objects with them that maybe Bigfoot was smelling this metal, or...
I think they smell the metal, but I think because they use those metal objects for shooting.
We got a couple more guests left on the show, and we only got 15 minutes.
Yeah, you know, this is the same thing happened to us last time. I get carried away talking to you.
Yeah.
A great guest. I'm going to have to ask that we, you know, maybe we can have you back on and do this again sometime, but
sure.
we do have to make room for the other guests.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate your comments and appreciate your ideas, and I'd love to talk to you more about it.
So, yeah, it's always great talking to you, Jabba Bob.
Thank you much. Good talking to you.
Too. Thank you. You can still listen on to the rest of the show here.
Okay, thanks a lot, and give my regards to Tom.
Sure will. And I'm going to mute you out right now, and then you just listen to the rest of the show. Alex, are you there?
I sure am, Marco, and hi, Bob.
Hi, Alex. How you doing?
I get carried away. Steve Isbor is on the line right now.
How you doing, everybody?
Hey! Alex, why don't you talk to Steve? I got to rest my vocal cords here.
You were doing awesome. I was listening. It was great. Great show tonight. Hey, Steve. And you know what, Marco and Bob? I heard a new theory, or relatively new. It goes right in line with what you're saying, and I think Steve will have something to say about it. I have a theory, someone told me a theory, and I agree with it. I think just the fact that you might be wearing camo is enough for them to maybe stay away because they're going to think you're a hunter. And I kind of thought back about it long and hard when I heard it, and most stuff that happened to me, and you'll remember the night up on the Apache Reservation with the thermals and the infrared and thermal heat sensors. You guys mentioned you could see my shots, see my legs. I didn't have my camos on yet. We had just got there. In fact, we stopped the trucks. We weren't even all the way into where we were going because we heard a screech, and we fanned out, and I was on the end. And I saw a smaller one, and you guys saw a bigger one up above me on the thermal, and you and Tom directed me towards it, and I kind of chased it. But I wonder, you know, and I don't think Steve and Rob were in any camos that night yet either. They might have been, but I don't recall. But I know I certainly wasn't. And any other activity I've had has always been when I didn't have my camos on and didn't have my weapon with me. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it. You know, we're their entertainment, we're their TV, as TJ says, but maybe not when we're armed and in camos and look like we're, you know, out to get them.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. When I was with Janice Carter-Coy, we went out. She was going to have us, she wanted to speak with one and bring us to let us see it. And she said it wouldn't come. It won't come out. I don't understand why it's not coming out. She said, have any of you got a pocket knife or anything? And I said, well, yeah, I've got a pocket knife. She said, well, they won't come out if you're carrying a pocket knife. And I gave her the pocket knife. It never did come out, but that stuck with me that, maybe. I mean, I'm sure they sense when you're a threat. Most, more women see them than men as well because women are less of a threat.
Right.
So,
you know,
they're not.
Right. And there's reports of the, I don't know if it was Leif Erikson, but the Norsemen coming down the coast. And when they hit, you know, Canada or Maine or Newfoundland, they don't really say exactly where it was. But they wrote that hairy men were on the shore throwing rocks at them. And, of course, back then they wouldn't know enough to stay away from a ship if there was such a thing, but that's a neat report, too.
Yeah, there's reports like that. You know, people don't understand that the term Bigfoot is relatively new. That came out in the, I guess, the late 50s or early 60s. It was a newspaper reporter that said, oh, these are really big feet. And somebody picked up on that, and the term Bigfoot came about. But this creature, as long as there's been newspapers in this country, they've written about it. They usually called it the wild man or the big hairy man. And a lot of the Native American names for this creature translate directly to big hairy man. The Blackfeet have a name for it that translates directly to big feet.
Right. Right, and I believe
hey, Alex, I've got 9 minutes left. AK dropped off. I think his cell phone battery went dead. we got is Steve on the line right now.
You know, it's a shame because AK could tell us the most about the Indian ideas about this thing. And Steve, we got to get you back on here. I've got to shut my big mouth and let you and Alex go.
Hey, Steve-O, tell us what's going on down there. Now, last time I talked to you, getting in your truck to go check something out late at night at a location where someone had called you from. Now, I don't know if that's the big news or what, but tell us what's going on.
Well, actually, the big news is what happened this morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. One of the ladies that originally got searching for Bigfoot down here had told about some creatures that lived up on the Clark's River Refuge. Now, I've been doing some research completely somewhere else, but this morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a call. By the time I get there, I'm just a few minutes too late, but there were several teenagers that was out parking on the refuge last night. Every one of them was bedazzled by a creature that was throwing rocks at their car. It was about 8 feet tall, covered in hair, and it went headed for the river, and they could hear it splashing as it was going away.
Imagine telling that to your dad, but Dad, I swear, some Bigfoot threw a rock at the car, Dad. I didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the fellow that was on earlier. He's very skeptical, and I can appreciate that, but that's the way he should be. And in the situation with what searching for Bigfoot does, there's an open invitation for anybody at any time to come out and see what it is that we do, okay? And Jolly Bob, like you said, there's a lot of times that you can come. I've got the guys down here, and there not be nothing going on. But a week earlier, everything was going on. And then again, we can be there for 3 nights, and just about an hour before the guys have to leave, we call a creature 1,000 yards from the back of the lake to directly across from it. And we got a recording of it. We were all there. I mean, anybody that would have been there would have knew, my gosh, this isn't right. This isn't something that you normally hear in the woods. Okay?
Well, we actually put that recording on our website.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that there's so many suppressors of what is actually the truth. What was it, Marlon Perkins years ago killed Bigfoot? That's basically what I mean by killing it, is he made it, he brought it out to the public that over in Tibet that the skull cap was fake and all that stuff. So it killed it off for the public at that point in time because it was Marlon Perkins that went over there, and now that it's getting to be more into the limelight again, there's people that are trying to prove that it exists. There's people that are trying to prove that it doesn't exist. But every day, somewhere in the United States, someone has an encounter with this creature, okay? Law enforcement, military personnel, you name it. And by the time they get to us, sometimes they back away because they're scared of losing their jobs. It's something that's very suppressed by our government. They don't want no one to know that it exists. It would kill off everything as far as tourism, the timber cutting, anything associated with the woods would be changed. So you got to take all that into sight too. And you can't go out there on any given Sunday and walk as far as you want to. Go find me a deer carcass. Go find me just take off walking and you go find me an elk carcass.
Well, they already showed on Monster Quest, I believe it was, or one of the paranormal shows. I believe it was Monster Quest. They did a time lapse of how long it takes a deer carcass to disappear. And you know, it was like 7 days, 6 days, it was completely gone. Mostly bones and all. Animals will carry away the bones. Anteaters will eat the bones. The other animals will eat all the meat.
Unless it's been buried, it will be gone within a year. And anyone that tells me otherwise, prove me wrong. I mean, if deer antlers fall off of a deer in the early spring, late winter to early spring, if you don't get out there and find them before summer, they're gone. Because the mice eat them. The calcium, they go after the calcium, they smell it. And it's like the metal, it's like the clothing, it's like the colognes, the soaps, everything we use that we brought over with us was a direct sign that, hey, we're here. When the Indians, on the other hand, didn't use those things, they used what was here from nature. So, I mean, I could see where he comes from on the speculation point, but there's an open invitation from you guys and from me that stands year-round. You want to go out and do some researching? Contact me. We can't go out for a couple of days. You got to look at the bigger picture. We might have to go out for a couple of months just to get one hoot, one howl, one footprint, whatever, because it's research and it requires you to go out and do that. And
if you're actually going to research an area, you got to go to that area over and over again, and that's what we do here. That's what we do. In the Encheas, and that's what...
2 minutes.
Got it, Marco. That's what we're doing up in Seligman. That's what we do all around Arizona. You're not going to, you know, like Java Bob said, every time you go, you're not going to find something. You have to go over and over and over again. You might find structure. You might find locations that look promising. You might find what, you know, Mitch described the other night on the forum as a battle zone, and I think Tommy AP was with us when we found that.
You've got to go out
and find those things. Go ahead, Steve.
The one other thing I'd like to bring up, but I've brought it up with you a whole lot here lately, Black Panthers do not exist. You can call our government, and they'll tell you that we don't have them in Kentucky, West Virginia, and all these other places, but everyone that lives in these places, that lives out in the woods, and it's not the common garden variety kitty cat. It's the 5-foot-long, 100-pound-plus cat that's packing off the family dog kind of cat.
Well, you know what you see in it.
We got 1 minute. We need to say goodbye to everybody.
You see a large black cat, there's only one cat that can be black, and that's a jaguar. We have the jaguars in Mexico. Of course, they're back in Arizona, and they're probably in your state too, Steve-O. They branch out 450 miles at each generation. Go ahead, Marco.
No, I'll close out the show there, Alex.
Well, everybody, I hope you had a great time tonight. Everybody in the chat room, Steve, thank you for coming on. AK, if you're listening, we'll get you next week, and I'll be calling you in a little bit. Be coming out there if you need me to. BB, glad to see you on the board and feeling better. Java Bob, it was great hearing you. Joshua, Bruce, everybody, keep Bigfooting and keep searching for Bigfoot.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you all next week.
Good night.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
Who are these prints out in Boswell?
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like break in day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is
size and everything else. They just were too realistic to be
frozen like a tree.
Somebody trying to manufacture
the hand was freaking
into the woods.
Female
Bigfoot creature lives. Bigfoot lives. It's a movie
right now.
And at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests, Java Bob and the Bigfoot team, for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, mixed mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. Brought them together, reasoned.